And on the line we have Janka Bienwila, who is a sociologist and the author of a book called Sports in the Global South, Work, Play and Resistance in Sri Lanka, and is also a TAFE teacher in New South Wales. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not a TAFE teacher. I'm policy officer.
Oh, policy officer. I thought because you worked at a TAFE that I more than likely made an assumption you're a teacher. Sorry for that. I guess the first kind of question I guess I want to kind of ask is, I want to kind of hear from, with your kind of expertise, what is sort of your comments on some of these recent kind of developments around Sportsgate, especially in the light of around the corruption kind of issues of the New South Wales government and its sort of links to sports?
I think in my book, I was trying to take a big picture view of what's happened to sports under neoliberalism and the spread of markets. And what I argue is that sports has increasingly shifted from the realm of social reproduction or the realm of households and communities into the realm of markets. So this is where sport is commodified and is used to make profits. Now, this Sportsgate happens in a context, broader context of that, where the state is actually divvying out a little bit of money to local sports to sustain them. Now, that little bit of money they're divvying out is that the corruption part comes in that, is the criteria and who gets involved, who decides. And generally there is a process that is, you know, a bureaucratic process that goes through the evaluation of each of the grants that have been applied. But as as we all know, there's ministerial interference to decide actually where these money goes, which is marginal seats and essentially pork barreling public funds for re-election of a ruling party. Now, there's a few areas we can look at that. One is the realm of sports media, which is highly dominated by just consumer culture and entertainment that doesn't report on these underlying issues that a lot of the sports clubs on the ground face, which is the lack of resources, lack of access to venues, a whole range of issues these local sports clubs are dealing with. So one is sports journalism and sports media. We need to interrogate that and say, look, you guys need to be a little bit more socially conscious about the on the ground reality of a lot of these clubs and why a lot of people are actually not participating in sport. So sports media is one. The other part is the role of the state, because the state actually should be giving block grants rather than getting these clubs to apply for grants continuously for every little thing they have to do. So what happens is these clubs can't plan for long-term programs, and the better clubs who can, afford a grant writer can get a better grant put up in the process. So the less disadvantaged clubs lose out in this process too. So that's the realm of the state. So I think we need to think, okay, how do we change the state? We need to start reinventing the block grant system where these sports clubs are given long-term funding, sustainable funding, with proper monitoring and evaluation.
Yeah. So within these sort of granting of kind of sports grants, there's sort of like a certain bit of sort of nepotism in it. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. But the other nepotism comes through the sports markets, in the sense, say, FIFA and then the local Australian Football Federation, and how this federation decides how all their money gets divided up among the local clubs. So the big revenue sports, I'm talking about cricket, rugby, football, basketball, not so much basketball and netball, but the big major sports, there's a whole lot of corruption and exploitation happening within that sphere too. But I think we can hold the market, I mean, the state more accountable, because these are public funds. They're actually divvying up for their own political purposes.
And how would you, I guess, in terms of like talking about these kind of some of this stuff in a sort of global context, what has these sort of issues sort of meant in terms of like both the kind of global north countries and even especially the global south, especially the more famous kind of example being the case of FIFA and the whole scandal surrounding the fact that Qatar is basically going to be hosting the next World Cup, and all the kind of accusations of corruption and so on coming out of that.
Yes, I think all global sports institutions, which is the dominant one, is the International Olympic Committee. And the second one is FIFA, and the third one is ICC cricket. All these three global institutions and their local counterparts are driven by what I call sports oligarchies. And these sports oligarchies need to be exposed, because they are not democratically accountable, or they have manipulated the internal systems for them to maintain their dominance within the system. So that corruption goes from global to national to regional to local in terms of nurturing sports oligarchies that are essentially there for their own self-interest and self-benefit rather than a collective interest. So one thing is to democratize all these institutions, demand all forms of public participation in these institutions that decide what's best for sports and the people. So I think the sports media has a big role to play, because sports media is not reporting in a sustained way about how these institutions are undemocratic and unaccountable and not responsible for the people on the ground. Who they're responsible is are the capitalist class that is benefiting from this system.
Junko, I'm wondering if you are aware of any examples in other parts of the world where they do have a system like what you've spoken of, where little local sports clubs get some sort of recurring funding, so they're not stuck in this cycle of applying for grants. And
yes, I think this is where the way capitalism globally spreads and how it locally embedded matters. So Australia has pretty much followed a kind of Anglo-Saxon capitalism that is akin to or driven by the US capitalist model, which is limited regulation and managerial prerogative and privatization. Whereas in the EU, even though they're still capitalist, there's still on the ground some national regulation and an orientation to what's called the social market. They still use the term social market, as opposed to in Australia and America, they use the term just markets or neoliberal free markets. So the term social markets matters, because that's where people feel that they have a voice in markets and they can embed these markets in the needs of local communities. So I would say Germany would be a good example to think about, because even within their professional football league, they still have what's called the 50+1 rule, which is that the local clubs have to be owned by at least 49% by the 51% by the local community.
Is that the Bundesliga?
That's right.
Wow. Oh, I never knew that. Amazing.
Yes. So this is the stuff that sports media should be discussing and creating a public conversation around, to figure out how best we can serve the community. But sports media is just driven by this consumer culture and entertainment and, you know, results and, you know, celebrity stories, without any deep analysis of how we can start rethinking about re-embedding sports markets in local communities.
And another question that kind of flows, especially since we're talking about soccer and football, is how do these sort of dynamics sort of disproportionately impact on countries, say, in the global south? Especially the worst example is the English Premier League, which I am, you know, I follow and I am a fan of, but the English Premier League's role is actually overall pretty negative, because essentially the English Premier League essentially takes most of the best talent from most of the countries in the global south with very high kind of transfer fees, etc. And yeah, I'm interested in sort of hearing your perspective on, I guess, about these sort of neoliberal kind of economic kind of dynamics in terms of the global markets and how they disproportionately impact on the global south.
Yeah. So, just like the English Premier League, the Qatar Olympic Games is also centers of labor migration, sports labor migration. And in the sense, the way the consumer culture of sports works is that there are particular urban centers that create sports markets. And in order to make a living for some of these sports laborers from the global south, and they're good at their sport, they eventually migrate into these urban centers in the global north. Now, there are particular corridors related to specific sports. So, for instance, in America, for baseball, there's a corridor from South to Latin America into America that this labor migration happens. And if you think of football, there's South America, Africa, especially that has migration corridors into Europe. So there's a pattern of particular kinds of sports labor migration that's happening. Myself included, I came from Sri Lanka, went to America to be a better springboard diver. Then I got an athletic scholarship to go to uni. Then I coached there for 5 years. Then I went back to Sri Lanka and went to the Olympics in 96. But all that happened because I was able to migrate out of Sri Lanka and get that extra, you know, skill that I could do in order to perform, you know. So the way the sports markets are set up, it creates this labor corridors, and in this process also they deplete local communities of local resources for sports, which forces these labor migrations to happen. So the English Premier League is not doing much for actually nurturing local sports clubs. It just creates a fan base for its own profit making, and we really need to get away from that kind of consumer culture of sports and to start really appreciating local sports and local clubs rather than these global spectacles that people are drawn into.
Yeah, Zane, you had a question?
Yeah, we'll probably wrap it up soon, but I was just wondering how this ties in with winning better funding for women's sports, because I feel like women's sports haven't been sucked into this vortex of super commercialized and marketized. Is that potentially a platform by funding women's sports to try and, I don't know, wrest things back and bring sports back into being this, as you say, a sort of more of a social reproduction thing rather than a source of money making?
Yes, I think that's a great put up really nicely in that sense. Yes, because sports is fundamentally grounded in patriarchy and racial capitalism. In the sense, sports markets coexist with nationalism and militarism. And both of these concepts and ideas are fundamentally grounded in patriarchy. So the way in which sports markets works is that they spruik up nationalism, and behind this nationalism is the militarism that is also spruiking. And this is a highly hyper-masculine kind of a sports culture that's emerged. So I think, yes, we really need to start rethinking how to change this patriarchal sports culture by encouraging an alternative form of sport. Now, yes, we need to push women's sport, but also have a different conversation, because there's a kind of a market feminism where women see girl power and empowerment purely within a market framework, rather than thinking in that kind of a framing. I think we need to start thinking, yes, women's sports within a non-capitalist or post-capitalist socialist framework. What would that look like? Well, that would look like an inclusive sports culture where people with disabilities, people with alternative sexualities are recognized and also allowed to participate and celebrated within sports. So making sports much more kind of a mixed environment where we kind of break it up the ways we have, you know, categorized sports into male and female and to able and disabled, and to really rethinking a much more communal form of sport where we kind of move away from this hyper competition to regain the sense of play and the notion of a festival in sport.
Hmm. Yeah, nice. I like the vision you paint there.
Yeah. All right, so I think we'll wrap up this interview now. Do you kind of have any final comments you'd like to make?
Look, I think what you guys are doing is so important. And, you know, the ways you guys try to get a message out is so important. So community radio also can get into community sport and start rethinking how community radio can be part of that new reimagined sport culture, rather than, because mass media is not helping an alternative vision of sport. So keep doing what you guys are doing, and keep encouraging an alternative vision of sports pleasures.
Word. All right. Thanks heaps for talking with us this morning, Janka. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. See you next time.
All right. Bye.